This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Al Berman. Al is the president of Jefferson Solutions. Al is also a former administrator for federal procurement policy in the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, OMB. And he is proud to serve with him on the Acquisition Advisory Panel, issued its report back in 2007 in the middle of the decade. And currently, Al is also the chairman of the Procurement Roundtable, which is a group, a not-for-profit group that focuses on procurement issues of the day, that sort of thing, and lends their views and tries to exchange information, that sort of thing. And we could talk a little bit about what Procurement Roundtable is during our discussion today, Al. But our topic for today, and welcome to the show,
Thank you very much, Roger. Nice to see you again here.
Yeah, and I got so wrapped up in all your credentials and whatever, I forgot to welcome you.
Well, I was going to say, I'm happy you're a member of the roundtable as well.
Oh, well, thank you very much, and I'm glad to be a member. It's a lot of fun. So Al, today, we're going to continue a discussion I started last week's show with various folks just about your perspective on the last decade of procurement, the sort of the post 9/11 world of federal procurement and how it's changed. You know, we've seen a lot over the last decade of all kinds of different things going on in terms of procurement oversight, changes to commercial item acquisition, the stress on the workforce, all those kind of things. So hopefully, you know, we can touch on a number of those issues and get your perspective as someone who worked in government and also now helps government and some of your consulting work and improving their management processes. I asked my guest last week where they were and what they were doing on 9/11, and I will ask you, what was going on that day with you?
You know, it's interesting, Roger, because I was back in the office. My office is on 14th and K, and we had some folks who are looking, who looked at the TV and saw that first plane go into the World Trade Center. And I was to give a speech down in one of the Treasury Department buildings down at the end of 14th Street.
Oh, wow.
Across from the Holocaust Museum. And so I had seen the first plane go in, and then I headed down 14th Street. It's a beautiful day. I remember what a nice day it was. And I was walking down there, got down there, and we were talking about contracting out or A-76 or those kinds of government contracting issues. And after a while, someone was speaking, and then there seemed to be a lot of things going on, kind of saw people coming to the side, and then pretty much the whole conference was closed down. This was around 10 o'clock or so, a little bit after 10, and with all kinds of rumors. I mean, we had heard that there were explosions on Arlington Memorial Bridge, that things were happening in the Capitol. But nobody really knew what was going on.
I remember there was also rumor about a car bomb at the State Department, right? I think there was.
Right. And so I walked back up 14th Street, and of course the traffic going down 14th Street was unbelievable. All of a sudden the city just filled up with people trying to get out of town. My most vivid memory is there were buses of doctors coming down 14th Street with troops in front of them running, kind of pounding on cars to get them out of the way as they were trying to make their way to the Pentagon. And coming up by F Street and G Street, you could see that crime scene tape, you know, the yellow tape used, they were blocking off 15th Street as well. So there's just massive confusion and really nobody understanding what was happening.
Yeah, it's... Just 2 days ago we had the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and it just does. It brings back a flood of memories, I think, for everybody about where they were and what was going on. And, you know, we can never ever forget the victims of 9/11, the families, and of course all the folks who since 9/11 have, you know, essentially signed up to protect us and keep us safe across the world. So
it's a number of heroes that day. And in fact, Susan Livingston, who's a vice chairman at the procurement roundtable.
Mm-hmm.
She was undersecretary of the Navy at that time, and she was one of the ones counting on people's voices to help her crawl out from the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. I talked to Susan on this. So there's lots of people with very vivid memories and a lot of appreciation for those folks who did do all kinds of heroic things to help us out.
Yeah, our first responders, absolutely. And now let's turn to the subject of the other subject
right.
of the day, and
sure.
And that is sort of where we've been in the last decade with regard to procurement. And I guess let me get your perspective first about where were we, let's say September 10th, 2001, in terms of the procurement system from your perspective.
Well, one of the things, clearly there were some real improvements that were made in the 90s to try to make the whole procurement process work more effectively for people on the program side. The schedules program was, I think, tremendous innovation in terms of getting people to make use of those schedules effectively and, in effect, pre-qualified bidders lists. Mm. The government-wide acquisition contracts, again, ways to move away from these four-year huge IT procurements into things that could be done much more in a much more modular way. But you also saw during the 90s some significant cutbacks in federal staff. And two areas that particularly were hit hard were the contracting area and the HR area. I think in some respects we're seeing kind of the results of that now during the 2000 era as when all the changes were made with Afghanistan, with Iraq, with the more than doubling of the federal contract money and an acquisition workforce, it stayed pretty much level for much of that time period. And so it was a real constraint in terms of people being able to get their job done well.
Well, yeah, with the ramp up, I mean, I think the philosophy, obviously, post-Cold War in the 90s was, we'll streamline the system and be able to do as much or more with less people, based on the system that, and that's
right.
That's a lot about the idea of these multiple award contracts. And that's a great point. I remember when I was back in government with regard to the IT, GWACs and that sort of thing, is that I worked on a number of these huge indefinite quantity, indefinite delivery contracts that agencies were doing pursuant to delegations of procurement authority from GSA. And that were all or none jobs that, you had one winner, you had multiple
right.
bid protests. And every time, you awarded one of those contracts, the first thing would happen is the contracting officer and the winner would be modding the contract on day one of the contract to add all the new technology that had become,
right.
Because their offer essentially was obsolete because it took so long. It took, 2 years to award one of those contracts.
Yeah, three, 4 years in some cases. I remember some huge ones.
So the idea of doing the streamlined task order competitions, and that's a great point of how it did streamline the process, make it more efficient. From your perspective, just in terms of, where things were at that time, do you feel like we had it, given where we were at that time I guess where our system was, we had it about right in terms of workforce versus streamlining? Going into,
I think there were lots of benefits for giving this customer focus to the contracting profession, and so I was certainly supportive of those kinds of changes. I had put in some policies on performance-based contracting to try to get a focus on outcomes and business outcomes and having agencies spend more time really thinking through what they wanted and working in collaboration program and contracting people to try to get good results. So I think there was definitely, we were going down the right path.
Right.
Of course, under the Bush administration, one of the major initiatives back then was the whole A76 contracting out effort, and that was seen as a major management tool to try to get better results for the taxpayer overall using competitive sourcing techniques to to do that. So there was a lot of emphasis on performance, even on the budget side. People were looking at the programs and trying to make judgments at the OMB. I spent many years at OMB on the OMB front trying to decide what programs were successful and what ones weren't and trying to get some data to go down that path.
Sure. Well, Al, right now we've reached the end of the first segment, so we'll have to take a break. Today we're talking to Al Berman. Al is the president of Jefferson Solutions, and we've been talking about the post 9/11 procurement world. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Government year-end is fast approaching. Look to GSA Advantage and the Han Company now and anytime you're challenged with a compressed time frame or to do more but spend less. Now more than 400 of Han's newest and top models are available online and at great manufacturer direct prices. You'll find multi-purpose chairs, smart desk solutions, durable storage cabinets, contemporary conference tables, and more to fit any office need. All meet or exceed government sustainability requirements, too. To shop Han Direct, go to gsaadvantage.gov and type Han's contract number 27F, like furniture, 0015S, like Sam, in the search bar. That's 27F0015S. When you need office furniture, GSA Advantage is a quick, safe way to buy online, and Han lets you stretch your budget without compromising quality or style. Buy Han Direct. Go to gsaadvantage.gov and search contract 27F0015S today.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
The nation's largest intelligence event of the year returns to San Antonio, Texas, October 16th through the 19th. Network with professionals from the defense, intelligence, and homeland security communities at the GEOINT 2011 Symposium. USGIF's GEOINT Symposium features keynote speakers from agencies, combatant commands, and Congress, as well as panel sessions and breakout tracks tackling the critical issues affecting national security. Register now or learn more at GEOINT2011.com. That's GEOINT2011.com.
What is the U.S. Department of Agriculture doing to transform rural America and enhance its prosperity? What is the USDA doing to cut costs and improve organizational performance? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with his very special guest, Kathleen Merrigan, Deputy Secretary at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that Geico offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. Now, this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact Geico. Tell them, Mike.
Hey folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
There are barbecue double burgers with mayo and bacon and cheese. There are 60-inch HD plasmas with cinema surround and 3D. There are mandatory conference calls at 8 p.m. on Saturdays. There are really comfortable overstuffed sofas that recline and vibrate and have cup holders and coolers built right in. And there are idiots behind the wheels of cars all over the road, and somehow they are always right there in front of you. There are moments when it feels as if the whole world is conspiring against your health, which is why there is Kaiser Permanente. We can be a partner. We can be a friend. A voice of moderation in a world gone excess and insane. So the next time you're faced with the choice between a televised marathon of vapid vixens or the chance to get a little fresh air, visit everybodywalk.org and we'll be there to help you thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guests, John Dedon, who's my partner at Odin Feldman & Pittleman, and Brian Kennedy, Vice President of Business Development at Wilson Bennett Capital Management and Cardinal Wealth Management. The show is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. area. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Government IT executives, step into the past to start shaping the future. At this year's Executive Leadership Conference in Colonial Williamsburg, the American Council for Technology and the Industry Advisory Council's ELC Conference, October 23rd through the 25th, brings together government and industry leaders to address the acquisition, security, and human capital challenges you face in your increasingly mobile world. Register today at actgov.org. That's www.actgov.org.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Al Berman. Al is the president of Jefferson Solutions Group, and we've been talking about, or started our conversation in the last segment, about 9/11 and the post-procurement world. And Al, just wanted to pick up on one of your used a term that I'm very familiar with, but you never hear about it anymore. You mentioned performance-based contracting, and I know, you know, in through the middle of the last decade, you know, even I can recall back in 2002, 2003, you heard a lot about performance-based contracting. You saw regulations revised to, in you know, to encourage the use of, to the maximum extent practicable, performance-based contracting. And then, you know, in the middle of the decade, there was a real, you know, push for it. And the Acquisition Advisory Panel had a whole chapter on performance-based contracting. But now today, you know, we don't really hear about it all that much. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's too bad that we aren't getting as much of a focus in that area, because I do think it really has merit in terms of getting agencies to have the right team of people together to think about what they want. And if you look at IG reports and GAO reports, I mean, one of the major issues in getting procurements going south is people not doing a good job of defining outcomes and what they're looking for. And that job is really something that has to be done both by contracting people and program people working together in collaboration. And one of the things that performance-based contracting requires is that kind of collaboration. As you said, Carl DeMeo and I were the prime authors of that chapter in the Acquisition Advisory panel, and we spent many hours scribbling away and trying to write up what was going on. But you might recall that I think at the urging of Scott Amey and Pogo, they said, you ought to do some independent review as to what's really going on. We had our own team of folks take a look at what was happening. And one of the things that was kind of disquieting was our study found that while people were saying they were doing it, when you actually looked at the details, a lot of people weren't. And so the question is really how much was being done. And I think it requires effort. Significant effort on the program side, because it takes time to do that.
People are sort of like slapping a performance-based label on their service requirement to be able to check that box and sort of report it.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, when you actually looked at what was going on, it was not.
They weren't really doing it, and a large percentage of things that were labeled performance-based weren't. On the other hand, my experience has been when we've worked with agencies that have used it, they've been delighted. They've gotten good results. It's really focused on performance and outcomes. And so I see real merit in going down that path. And, you know, this administration clearly has a very strong performance agenda as well. So it seems to me that it definitely would fit in with the other things that are being promoted.
Now, do you think that one of the reasons that it sort of didn't, you know, take hold or it's not as common is because that, you know, all the different challenges going on, you know, one of them, as you mentioned, is the fact that the acquisition workforce was downsized and program management was downsized. And HR, it's a great point, too, about HR. HR offices in the federal government were really downsized. You know, sort of everybody's seen, I guess you see all that as overhead, right, as opposed to the real operation. And but the fact that the acquisition workforce was downsized and those program managers had less resources, I mean, I think that probably, you know, my sense is that that's what limited, you know, the implementation of performance-based.
I, I agree with you, Roger. I think that that's one of the major reasons why we aren't seeing as much, because it does take some time and effort and getting the right people together at the front end of a process. And, you know, one of the criticisms that this administration has made, even back to the president's letter back in March 2009, is, are we spending enough time overseeing and managing contracts to see that we're getting the results that we're looking for? Are we paying enough attention to who's doing the work and who should be doing the work? And so I think that also contributes some to the problem.
Right. Well, yeah, that's always that issue. It's the sexy part is awarding the contract.
Right.
The real hard work is, you know, actually managing the contract performance. And do you sort of, I mean, just on that issue, do you share that sort of view that there hasn't been enough emphasis on that management of contract performance piece?
I share it. I don't see it as a fault of the community, because I think that there's a tremendous amount of workload. When we see the way the dollars have gone up, it's almost universal across the government. People are trying to get those procurement vehicles and procurements out, but it's not easy to do, and a lot of their focus then is that
right.
That
and
part
it's also
of the process.
It's also not easy, right, when you have continuing resolutions,
right.
Like you're leading, you know, six or seven of them, and you don't get a budget till like April, right?
Yeah, some of the agencies, I know DHS, USAID, a number of the agencies are waiting so that they can then get the materials out for people to act on.
Right. Yeah, they're still waiting. Yeah. So, but one of the things that you know, you mentioned that seems like, you know, what goes around comes around, or you know, like your pendulum swings, whatever cliche you want to use, is, you know, one of the hearts of performance-based contracting is that communication between industry and government on, you know, to be able to clearly articulate the outcomes and expectations. And aren't we seeing like that come back with the MythBusters sort of campaign that Dan Gordon, too much to his credit, I think it's a great. I mean, it's great that he is doing this. That he's saying it's important to talk about requirements with industry and government, because it is ultimately you can't, you know, succeed with, you know, one without the other for many programs, obviously. So do you see it sort of coming around saying, okay, now we do need to talk about requirements?
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and I think that's a great effort on OFPP's part to try to let people know of some good ideas on how best to do that, and to make it clear that it's appropriate to have these kinds of conversations, because I think when you have a risk-averse group, if you don't get that kind of encouragement, sometimes it's tough for people to make the effort.
Yeah, there's no cover, right?
Right, and there's no cover, and it's internally it's in the government's interest to communicate program and contracting people. Externally, it's in the government's interest contracting folks outside with government staff.
Yeah, and with regard to you know, that, you know, just thinking about the MythBusters, now we're on it for a minute, you know, what do you think in terms of that approach is the most effective thing that, and put on your performance-based hat for a second too, and think about it that through that lens, what do you think would be the most effective communication approach if you were, you know, sitting down to plan a procurement today?
Well, there are a number of techniques that you can use, from putting out draft RFPs to having industry days to having individual conversations. And I think the individual conversations are very helpful, because what you'd like to do is at the front end of the process have some really good ideas of what's out there, what the capabilities might be, and be able to structure a procurement that gives you the best possible result by using that information.
Right. Well, you know, Al, right now we have to take our next break. But when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the acquisition workforce and where it's come since 9/11 and where it was at that point. So when we go back, we'll take a look at that. I'm talking to Al Berman, the president of Jefferson Solutions, chairman of the Procurement Roundtable, and we're talking about the post-9/11 world of procurement. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Government year-end is fast approaching. Look to GSA Advantage and the Han Company now and anytime you're challenged with a compressed time frame or to do more but spend less. Now more than 400 of Han's newest and top models are available online and at great manufacturer direct prices. You'll find multi-purpose chairs, smart desk solutions, durable storage cabinets, contemporary conference tables, and more to fit any office need. all meet or exceed government sustainability requirements, too. To shop Hahn Direct, go to gsaadvantage.gov and type Hahn's contract number 27F, like furniture, 0015S, like Sam, in the search bar. That's 27F0015S. When you need office furniture, GSA Advantage is a quick, safe way to buy online, and Hahn lets you stretch your budget without compromising quality or style. Buy Hahn Direct. Go to gsaadvantage.gov and search contract 27F0015S today.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
How will you meet cost reduction mandates while maintaining IT operations? Looking for shortcuts to comply with Executive Order 13514 and the OMB scorecard? 1E, a leader in IT efficiency software, is working with your colleagues in the federal government to reduce PC power consumption at the VA, optimize bandwidth for the State Department, and maintain an app store at the Bureau of Reclamation. Go to 1E.com to find out how they can help. That's the number 1, the letter E.com. 1E, empowering IT efficiency and cost reduction for today's federal agency.
Government technology professionals should prepare to attend GovCom 2011, the new trade show featuring government audiovisual communication solutions at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, November 1st and 2nd, featuring nearly 100 leading manufacturers and solutions providers showcasing the latest in audio, video, conferencing, collaboration, control systems, digital signage, and visual display technologies. GovCom will help government agencies and the military boost collaboration, enhance security, improve reliability, and cut costs. GovCom is your opportunity to see cutting-edge communications products, network with fellow technology professionals, and get valuable training from leading experts in government and industry. For more information and your free exhibits pass, visit GovCom with two M's, show.org, and use the code FED. That's govcomshow.org. GovCom is brought to you by Infocom International, the association representing the audiovisual industry.
And now, the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Facing harsh budget realities, some agencies are already offering buyouts and early retirements. Some that have started the process include agriculture, the Air Force, education, FTC, GAO, the Government Printing Office, Housing and Urban Development, the Postal Service, Justice, the Library of Congress, and the Smithsonian. And more are likely to come. I'm Amy Morris.
WEPA, a nonprofit association, has just announced another 25% premium refund. Since 1996, WEPA has returned over $58 million in premiums, and the average WEPA policyholder has received over $1,700 in refund checks. WEPA also offers life insurance at rates far less than the FEGLI program. Is it a time you considered WEPA for your family's life insurance needs? For better insurance, better prices, and better value, visit WAEPA.org. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
A major hurricane raises the obvious question, can our homes be better built to withstand violent weather? The answer is, of course, yes. But at what cost? Tim Reinhold, chief engineer at the Institute for Business and Home Safety, says with about a 2% increase in the cost of a new home,
you can certainly raise the level of strength of a typical house quite a bit because our connections are generally so poor between the roof and the walls and the walls and the foundation.
Reinhold says the key is strapping the roof trusses to the top of solid walls. His experiments with wind speeds of 110 miles per hour showed
the front door on the conventional house blew open. When that pressure got inside, the whole house came apart in 4 seconds, whereas the other house that was strapped together well stood there and didn't have any problems.
To find out more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Al Berman, president of Jefferson Solutions, chairman of the Procurement Roundtable. And Al, when we took the break, we're just about to started a discussion about the acquisition workforce. And I guess let's just start with the big picture question. What's your views on the current state of the acquisition workforce?
Well, I think that there's definitely a positive trend in that the numbers are going up some, and that there's a recognition on the part of both the administration and Congress that it's important that those numbers go up and that you have people with the right skills to be able to handle all of the kind of contracting work that agencies do these days. So I'd say that's a positive. The wild card in the equation is the budget and the question of what's going to be happening to agencies in terms of following a path of continuing to hire people in this area. One of the concerns in the past, I know in speaking to previous administrators, was when push would come to shove, if there were only a limited number of slots available to agencies, then it was kind of hard to get them to say, I'm going to hire the procurement guys or gals.
Right.
I'm really going to look more at people that are perceived as program managers directly affecting
the
agency mission.
Yeah. Whereas GSA, that makes, you'd be hiring procurement folks, right?
Exactly.
That's its mission.
So GSA has an advantage in this game, I guess.
Right. Or maybe not.
Uh-huh.
So when you're thinking about the acquisition workforce, do you see it as to sort of bring it to where it ought to be, is this going to be a short-term fix, or is it something that's going to take sustained, consistent investment over a long period of time?
I think it is very much a long-term fix, and I think that there is recognition that this is going to be the long haul to try to do that. There's lots of intern programs now that agencies are developing. VA has its academy that it uses. The Federal Acquisition Institute, Defense Acquisition University are trying to provide better training and more effective training for folks to see that they do have the competencies and the skills to do the job. So all of these are important. One of the things that I've found in visiting with various agencies, though, is you still have an enormous workload problem, the point we were talking about before in terms of just getting those contracts out and getting to award. And I found in many places where in the past you would have supervisors who could act as coaches and mentors and who would really be reviewing the work of their staff, these days, given the amount of workload going on, they're doing the work themselves. So they're spending a lot of time trying to make sure the most sophisticated procurements are getting done well, but that has a definite negative effect on the ability to nourish those people who are coming up in the profession. And I think having a greater focus not only on junior folks bringing people on board, but also on the roles and responsibilities of senior folks to see that they can perform that kind of coaching, mentoring, nurturing role, I think is an important factor.
Right. And one thing I wanted to also ask you about, and this will sort of shift radically a little bit, to the Wartime Contracting Commission.
Mm-hmm.
Its report came out just recently, and I see that as, obviously, when you look at the ripples of 9/11, you have Afghanistan, you have Iraq, you have the issues on procurement and where money went or didn't go and that sort of thing, and the commission report. Do you have any what were your impressions of the report?
Well, I testified before the commission on some of the security issues, the use of private contractors for performing security services. And one of the problems that you have is the complexity of the operation. You would like to have everything laid out in advance. You'd like to have good planning. You'd like to have all those contingency efforts there. Unfortunately, when things happen, they happen fast and not necessarily as anticipated. And so I think under any circumstance, you're going to have these kinds of difficulties. And I'm sure that there are many contractors that have done a very effective job to try to meet agency needs. But I think their number was some $30 billion in waste was what the commission identified.
30 or 60 or something like that.
That's,
right?
It's a...
There's a multiple of three,
it's a,
right?
It's a big amount of money. Yeah. And, you know, obviously, when you're in that kind of environment, having good management controls, having the necessary number of federal staff to oversee becomes critical to making that process work effectively. Again, I remember in testimony before one of the Senate committees, just the ability to get folks from the USAID IG's office space to be able to do the work in Afghanistan was a complication. And so I think when you start thinking about some of these kinds of issues, there clearly people could have done things better, but I think that there was an awful lot of effort being done to try to make this process as successful as possible as well.
Right. And I think, you know, the sense I get from the report is they are trying to sort of say, okay, this is what you ought to do in contingency operations. You know, the thing that as a someone who worked and has worked in the procurement system all my professional career is like, is the, there's always the danger that you take these reports and you try to apply lessons learned and observations from something that's dealing with contingency operations. Let's apply that to the entire procurement system. You know, do you share that concern?
No, I do share that concern. You really have to look at the cases and the individual cases. And, of course, there are some of those contingency issues that came up right after 9/11 in terms of being able to acquire goods and services quickly from folks. The Katrina issue was precisely the same kind of thing. And a lot of the issues that that came up just in terms of security, communications, things that people hadn't anticipated that would be problematic, being huge problems in trying to deal with these issues, and then trying to get your contracting people to figure out how to handle those kinds of problems. And those aren't necessarily contracting problems. Those are program and mission problems.
Yeah, and I just on Hurricane Katrina, it is, it's, you know, you think about, you know, because I guess, you know, I did a little bit involved in procurement there and as a, quote, contingency operation. And you are under so much pressure and because it's, you know, we're talking about loss of life, right? So you got to, I got to get a contract in place to get water or whatever supplies I need. You know, the goal is to get, I mean, fundamentally, the goal is to get the contract in place, you know, and get something to the people so they can actually, you know, drink some water, right? That's been... that's safe. And so, you know, that pressure, you know, changes how you actually approach it and execute it. And, you know, the issue I always had with that is like the folks coming behind you taking a look at it and saying, why'd you do it that way? Well, you know, you told you needed to get water someplace within a day or otherwise, you know, health and safety of people are going to be impacted. So it's a difficult and challenging area. But right now, you know, Al, we do have to take our last break. But when we come back, I want to ask you a little about A76, inherently governmental, and how we've gotten to where we are because, you know, OMB has just issued their policy guidance on inherently governmental. So and we'll get your comments on that. Right, you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Cloud Computing Report is brought to you by Trusted Enterprise Cloud, an innovative cloud computing solution from Harris Corporation and VMware.
Cloud computing is changing the way IT managers operate within agencies. Mary Davey of the General Services Administration tells Federal News Radio she sees more agencies today moving to the cloud because they see the costs and efficiency benefits, not because they were mandated under the 25-point IT plan. And she says it's not just private cloud models being used. Depending on the type of data being stored, public and hybrid clouds are also gaining traction.
Are you looking to move software and applications to the cloud, but you're concerned about security and reliability? Then take a look at Trusted Enterprise Cloud, a world-class cloud computing system with patented trust technology built in. Go to harris.com/cloud, and you can request a design review with a solutions architect. That's harris.com/cloud.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico. the Government Employees Insurance Company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about GEICO's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Do you worry about the kids being home alone after school? You don't need to. Experience peace of mind with Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security. Already have a system? Switch to Ackerman's award-winning monitoring and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and it's free to switch. Know your home is protected before the kids come home. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. 1-888-999-1070. Ackerman Security.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
MEADS, the Medium Extended Air Defense System, is covering new ground in air and missile defense. 8 times more ground to be exact, which means it will protect more troops on the ground and keep more dollars in the budget. MEADS has the advanced capabilities and reliability that the 40-year-old Patriot system cannot provide. And it will cost half as much to man and maintain versus upgrading Patriot, which is already costing U.S. taxpayers billions of dollars. MEADS 360-degree coverage defends 8 times more area using fewer assets and has the lethality to defeat advanced threats by being more mobile and agile. Defending more, costing less. Only MEADS covers it all. For more information about the MEADS program, go to MEADS-AMD.com. That's MEADS-AMD.com.
Government IT executives, step into the past to start shaping the future. At this year's Executive Leadership Conference in Colonial Williamsburg, the American Council for Technology and the Industry Advisory Council's ELC Conference, October 23rd through the 25th, brings together government and industry leaders to address the acquisition, security, and human capital challenges you face in your increasingly mobile world. Register today at actgov.org. That's www.actgov.org.
Connect with Federal News Radio wherever you are. Like us on Facebook to see the hottest news stories on your wall. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio. Download our free iPhone app. Just go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio. And now, connect to the radio station straight from your cell phone. Just call 712-432-6616. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for social media for details.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today I'm talking to Al Berman. Al is the president of Jefferson Solutions, and he is the chairman of the Procurement Roundtable. And we were taking the break, Al. We were going to talk about inherently governmental functions during this segment. And let's start first, like sort of setting the stage, I think. And you know, post 9/11 and the Bush administration policy about A76 and competing out certain requirements. Can you sort of give us a framework of the overall policy, you know, during the Bush administration?
Sure. And again, this is a longstanding policy that's been initiated in government back in 1955 with the Eisenhower administration.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And it's been used by both Democratic and Republican administrations since then. The policy letter is A76, dealing with commercial services. But the idea behind the policy is that the government really shouldn't be in competition with the private sector for performing commercial services, so that if there are activities that are being done by federal staff that are commercial in nature, then there's a process put in place both in policy through A76 and then in the FAIR Act, Federal Activities Inventory Reform Act, back in 1998, that helps to identify what are those kinds of commercial activities and sets the stage for performing a competition between the people performing that work in the government and private sector firms that would argue that they could perform it more effectively or efficiently. So that's the basic policy. It had shifted from a notion of contracting out, where the bias was essentially we're going to take this job and we're going to put it in the private sector, to competitive sourcing. And that was the language of the Bush administration as well, a management tool to say we're going to try to come up with the best result for the taxpayer, as opposed to necessarily saying that these jobs should automatically be transferred out to the private
sector.
Right,
because under the policy, right, the government could theoretically win the competition.
And they win many.
Yeah, and provide a better value to the to meeting the agency mission and ultimately the taxpayer.
And this was a major part of the president's management agenda under the Bush administration. Under this administration, there really hasn't been much effort in that regard. Plus, there have been a number of provisions in Congress that have basically prevented agencies from going down this path. So it's definitely not something that has been a highlight of this administration.
Right. So what's all the noise about inherently governmental, in terms of the policy that, the executive branch has, regardless of party? What is the deal?
The notion of putting out a policy on inherently governmental functions is the idea that there are some things that are so intimately related to the public interest that they really ought to be done only by civil servants, only by federal employees. And that's really been a long-standing policy. I put a policy out to that effect in the early 90s. The language of that policy was put in place in the FAIR Act in 1998. The similar kind of language has been used in the A76 circular as well. And it's the first-order question that agencies ought to ask. Is it appropriate for this work to be done by contract? And so you need to make that initial judgment that you don't want to have people in any way thinking that the results of some kind of activity, contract, could be biased and that aren't in the best interest of the public.
Right. So we have this administration, I think one of the things, like, right, you go back to the president's memo in March of 2009, right, talked about inherently governmental and sort of fixing, the definition and developing a coherent policy. Why a coherent policy? Are there so many multiples of different policy letters or perspectives on it?
Well, I've mentioned a few, and the FAR has some language, the FAIR Act. So I think there was a sense that there needs to be a single definition, and that was something that's also referenced in one of the National Defense Authorization Acts as well, to address this question. The president in his March 2009 letter asked, are we really doing a good job of asking this question? Are we paying attention to it? In addition to his concerns about are we overseeing contracted activities effectively enough. And I know that from the National Defense Authorization Act perspective, there was also a question of have we gone too far down a path where, in effect, we are relying on contractors to do things that more appropriately ought to be done by federal employees? Are we giving up our institutional memory? Do we not have enough of the competencies and the knowledge base to really be able to effectively take information and recommendations provided by the private sector and make good use of them?
Right. Okay. So what we have now is there's a draft policy letter floated, right? And, there's public comment on it and that sort of thing. And then lo and behold, today, I get my days screwed up. It was yesterday, actually.
In the Federal Register.
Right, in the Federal Register it showed, or this morning. Yesterday, that's right. It showed up yesterday in the Federal Register, the final policy letter from OMB on inherently governmental functions. I know you've had a chance to, I'm not going to quiz you on it because it just came out, but I know you've had a chance to take a look at it, glance at it. What are your observations on it?
I think it's a very effective document that does a good job of addressing the issues that were raised both by Congress and the president in terms of trying to get people better guidance on what constitutes an inherently governmental function, what constitutes activities that, while they might not be inherently governmental, are closely associated with governmental functions, to say that if you're doing these kinds of things, frequently a lot of that is support being given for contracting kinds of work, that you ought to be very careful on how you do those functions. And then identifying critical functions that generally are identified as activities that are central to the agency's purpose and where the agency really should have full control over carrying out those activities, or have an ability to be able to effectively oversee contractors who might also be supporting some of those critical functions.
Right. So, okay, so from your perspective, what are the highlights or the takeaways from it that you see?
Well, I see the policy is remaining pretty much the same, which says, again, that the exercise of discretion in doing the kinds of key activities that government does remains to be governmental. And activities like setting policy, determining budgets, dealing with foreign policy, they've added the security and combat activities to inherently governmental functions, I think, and largely in response to some of the criticisms and questions that come out of the wartime contracting area. With regard...
So what does that mean? Does that mean that if there's any chance of combat, as you're performing a security function, if there's any chance of combat, it's got to be a government person?
An anticipation that if you anticipate that you're going to be in that situation, then that should be done by governmental people. The problem you have with all of these kinds of things is you can make a judgment from a policy standpoint, but then that has to be carried out in practice. And if you don't have somebody who's in the government side able to do the work, then what do you do?
Right.
So, I mean, you have these challenges.
So if you needed security and you don't have the government folks available, what are you going to do?
What do you do? So you still have those kinds of challenges that you have to contend with. And it does not lay out what are critical functions. It lets agencies make those determinations, which I think is appropriate because different agencies are going to define different kinds of things as critical. Right. If you're a NOAA, a meteorologist is probably pretty critical to what you're doing. A meteorologist for the Census Bureau? Probably not. And so you have this kind of ability for agencies to make independent judgments on how best to structure their own operations and maintain control of their own operations.
Now, what did it say with regard to small businesses?
It makes a point that in looking at activities where there might be some notion of insourcing, that to look very carefully as to whether it's being done by a small business or not. And if some activities need to be brought in, then there should be an effort to see, as long as there are two small businesses there that are capable of performing the work, that ought to be reserved then for small businesses. This is something called the rule of two that's been in contracting for a long time.
Sure. So overall, you think this is a... Yeah, you know, is a good step forward.
I think it answers the mail very effectively because you do have a single definition. I think it gives you some examples of how you can use it. It gives more emphasis with regard to those areas where you're not necessarily performing the work as government employees performing the work, where you do have the requirement that somebody in the agency have responsibility for making a judgment, that they are going to, in fact, be noting that they're making these kinds of judgments, so that they're trying to give more emphasis to folks to be taking the question seriously as well.
Well, Al, we're at the end of the time for today. I appreciate you coming in and talking. Really interesting stuff. The procurement system post 9/11. I want to thank my guest, Al Berman, president of Jefferson Solutions and chairman of the Procurement Roundtable. Thank you for being on the show. It was great.
Thanks very much, Roger. Always delighted to be here.
And you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30 only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.